The Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett, has worked for 30 years at newspapers, including the New York Post, the Bergen Record, Ottawa. He's outlasted some of the very institutions he worked for, which is partly why he's stepping down from his position as a reporter covering the state capitol and moving on to a new career. Monday, we will be reading his last column. Today is his last day on the job, and he joins us now to talk about his career and how both politics and the press have changed over the past three decades. Welcome back.
Thank you. It makes me kind of sad the way you introduced me.
I know. Well, you know, this is a very bittersweet day for many of us here in the LCA, but we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. First, I want to start at the point at which you decided you wanted to become a journalist. Like me, we're pretty much the same age. Okay, I'm a little bit older than you.
Not really.
But not that much. But you know, we grew up in the 70s, yeah. You know, post-Watergate.
I really, as long as I remember, I mean, originally it was sports, and I wanted to be a sports writer, uh-huh. and I read Marv Albert's book as a kid, and he talked about how he used to set up a table and watch games with all notes, and I used to do that and record myself. And then in high school, I was part of the school paper, and you know, my first internship was Library World. It was a library publication that basically I rewrote press releases.
And I can't imagine you would have something called Library World.
You know, it was really funny, though. One of the valuable lessons I learned, my first lesson in journalism, was from them, because the first edition came out, I had like 10 or 11 pieces, basically rewritten press releases, and I was walking my dog that day. It came out, and my next-door neighbor comes out and says, you know, Kenny, that was great. We love seeing that. And my head swelled, and I went to the next house, and it was already in the garbage unread. My head went back down, and I took that as a lesson. That I always talk that, you know, there's no guarantee people care or want to read what you write.
No, but you did have a goal.
I did, and so I went to college, and again, it was sports, and I got to cover the Yankees and Mets for a summer for a radio station as an internship. But covering the Mets and the Yankees, really, I realized I would end up not liking sports because the players were... They left something to be desired, let's put it that way.
In dealing with the journalists who covered them.
And I said, you know what? I like going home and putting on a ball game. If I covered that for my career, I would really lose that enthusiasm for sports. So I ended up saying I love politics, and so I refocused that for my career. And really from then on, that's what I shot for.
You worked at a very prestigious college paper. Right, the Buffalo Record?
The Spectrum, it was called.
The Spectrum.
And it came out three times a week, and I got to be editor-in-chief there my last year, and we worked really hard. And even then, I remember, like, you know, not to sound pretentious, but people would say, oh, you know, I would get really demanding, and someone would say, it's a college paper. I'm like, I don't want to hear that. Like, you know, well, the journalism is journalism. And even then, I took it very, very seriously, although not myself seriously, but the job seriously.
There's something pretty entrepreneurial about being a reporter, I think. You know, you really have to motivate yourself to go that extra mile, to put in that extra level of context.
Except, I would argue, the reason I wouldn't say it's entrepreneurial is that usually when you're an entrepreneur, you want a lot of money. And journalists don't go in this field for the cash. They just don't. And, you know, I've had friends who have done really well, and people say, oh, are you jealous? I'm like, no, they did what they wanted to do. I'm doing what I wanted to do. But my first job out of college was the Watertown Daily Times up in northern
New
York.
North, yep.
And I had never even heard of the place. And my first salary was $300 a week. It was $15,600 before taxes, $300 a week. So it wasn't a lot of money, and you're just churning things out. And being a kid from Long Island who went to school in Buffalo, you know, my first job was in the Bureau of Canton in St. Lawrence County. And the headline that first day that I was there, let's see what paper I'm working for, was "More You, Less Moo." For the first time ever, there were more people in St. Lawrence County than cows. And I was like, oh, my God. But you know, even there, I learned so much. I went in as an aggressive, you know, wearing a tie and jacket and talking fast, and it wasn't working.
You're a downstate New Yorker.
Right, but it wasn't working up there. And I learned after about a month that if I was going to succeed, I had to kind of alter that. And I did, and things I learned working in Watertown, I used when I was at the Post. I mean, there are times when you have to be uber aggressive, but there's times you also have to know how to back off and use a different, you know, different arrow in your quiver. And every time I would, I would always think, and I'd even email the old editor there and say, man, I wouldn't have gotten that interview without my time in Watertown.
Yeah. So you, from there you worked at, I think, what, Ottaway, Bergen Record?
Well, from Watertown to the Middletown Times Hall Record, I covered City Hall, and then I became a Night City editor. And then I came to Ottaway, which was my in 94, which was my first foray into state capital here. And we covered the now defunct Ottaway News Service. And we covered Albany for the Middletown Times Hall Record, the Plattsburgh Press Republican, and the Oneonta Daily Star.
And where did you meet your bride?
I met my bride while in Middletown.
Uh-huh.
And really on my last day, we got to know each other. I was coming up to Albany. And at my going away party, we really clicked. And we had a little long distance thing going for a while. And next thing you know, we're engaged and married.
Amy is also a journalist, we should mention, and she worked at, where did she work?
She worked at the Times Hall Record, and then she came up here and she worked for Empire State Report, which was a state government, you know, a magazine covering state government policy issues. And then she went into colleges, college publications.
So your goal was always to work for a big city paper.
Yeah.
And you worked for two.
I did. I got very lucky. Went to the Bergen Record after Ottaway and was there for about 7.5 months. And then the Post came calling, but for back to Albany. And we had sold our house, but we moved back here. And I got, you know, I spent a lot of over 8 years at the Post, and I had a great time. I worked with Fred Dicker, which was an experience and one that.
What kind of experience was it with Fred Dicker?
It was good. You know, Fred had this image of, you know, of being really tough and aggressive, but really, when you worked for him, he was fine. You know, he just let you do your thing. He wanted you to break stories. And so I found it to be fine. Like, he was the opposite to me than he was to what the rest of the world saw. And so that was a great experience. But also while at the Post, I got to cover, you know, not only stuff at the Capitol, the rise and fall of Elliot Spitzer, all that kind of stuff, but I got to do a lot of national stuff that was amazing. You know, I got to cover the presidential recount in 2000, the Gore-Bush election, for 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
Down there. And, you know, at the time, I remember saying to Greg Birnbaum, who was at the New York Post, that this is going to be the biggest story we ever cover. And he said, you think so? I said, yeah, this will be in our obit. The selection of a president hasn't happened like this in 100 years. Then a few months later, 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
And I went from here to Boston, from Albany to Boston that day, was there for about a week, and then I went down to New York City. So that obviously was the biggest story.
You covered the pile.
Covered the pile, covered, you know, where the planes took off from. That was the hardest ever. Like, even I was choking up interviewing a lot of people.
Emotionally.
And I don't get usually emotional, but that was a really tough couple of weeks. You know, I got to cover Terry Schiavo down in Florida, you know, a right to die case.
Yeah. Also tough,
but just really interesting. You know, as a reporter, you want to be where the stories are. And when I was at the Post, certainly I got to do that around the country. You know, I was in L.A. for a trial on Hillary Clinton's chief fundraiser. I was on the campaign trail with Obama for 10 days. So I got to do a lot of great stuff at the Post. I loved it there. And then the Daily News came calling and wanted me to head their bureau. And I ended up moving, and that, you know, that was a lot of fun, too.
For 10 years.
For over 10 years. And,
what's a story that made you think to yourself, as you were covering it, I am witnessing history?
I think the recount, I think 9/11, you know, local history, you know, in terms of state government, you know, Elliot Spitzer, the coup, you know, the Senate coup,
right.
Was
yeah.
Really when they had dueling sessions. You know, that won't be something the public at large remembers, but anyone who's within the political sphere will remember stuff like that. But certainly the recount and 9/11 were the biggest stories, and knowing that this would be, you know, historic.
You have also covered stories that are sort of part of our national consciousness. I mean, certainly 9/11, all of these are part of our national consciousness. But the person who shot John Lennon, Mark David Chapman, you were covering his parole hearings year in and year out. And he was up for parole for like, and he's always,
times.
Yeah, 10 times.
Every other year.
One of your bylines in 2012 read, Mark David Chapman once again allowed to have conjugal visits with his wife. Yeah. You love the Beatles. Was that a hard, I mean, was it hard to cover things that you're sort of connected to emotionally?
No. You know what was really actually pretty cool about that? Especially the first time. The first time I wrote about it was, I think, in 2000 when I was at the Post. And what was really great about that was when John Lennon was shot, I was 14 years old. And again, big Beatle fan and growing up on Long Island, I would grab the New York Post, the Daily News, the Times, and Newsday. For about 2 weeks, I was clipping all the John Lennon stories out of that. So then when I got to the Post and I started writing about it, it was kind of a cool, that was like one of the few times I let myself enjoy it and think to myself, wow, you know, this thing I was doing clipping as a kid,
yeah,
I'm now writing for that publication. And so that was kind of a fun experience for me. So, you know, I was able to separate out, you know, what had happened, and, you know, it wasn't personal to me in that regard, but that was personal, just being able to, that's when I first realized, well, I'm writing for a paper I grew up reading.
Yeah, that's, I'm surprised that you never wanted to write for, like, Rolling Stone, or did you?
No, you know, I really loved politics, and when I wanted to go to a New York paper, I wanted it to either be New York City Hall, Albany, or to a lesser degree, Washington, unless it was for a really big paper, but I felt you could have more of an impact. And yeah, I mean, entertainment would have been fun, but I think it could have turned out the same way that, you know, when I had that brief foray into sports, I would have been disappointed. You know, what do they say? Don't meet your heroes. Well, I don't really have political heroes, so that right. wasn't an issue.
At least certainly not anymore. did you ever want to write for the New York Times?
You know, when I got the job at the Post, I called my uncle and I said, hey, I got a job at the New York Post. And first thing out of his mouth was, when are you going to the Times? And I kind of laughed. No, I really, you know, one of the things I really enjoyed about working for the tabloids was you got to do real serious journalism. And we did. I wrote a lot about the Moreland Commission. You know, I broke a lot of those stories.
Child Victims Act.
Yep. Alan Hevesy scandal investigation.
Huge scandal that we thought was the hugest scandal until the next one.
Yeah. And so, you know, I got to do, quote unquote, that kind of journalism, but I also got to do some fun stuff as well that you wouldn't necessarily do. So it kind of melded it. I felt I did real serious journalism, real serious political reporting, but you also got to do some fun things.
You told me once that you enjoy a movie called The Paper with mm-hmm. Michael Keaton and Marissa Tomei, and it's one of the reasons why you like the tabs.
Yeah, it's just lively, and it's really exciting. It's very competitive. I felt that the first time, and I was relatively new. I don't know if you remember the Amadou Diallo trial.
Of course. I covered it for NPR.
It was up here. I mean, four police officers shot Amadou Diallo 41 times down in New York City, but they held the trial up here. I just got to the Post when the trial was ending. I didn't cover the trial itself, but they sent me off to find the jurors after the cops were acquitted. And it was really me and a bunch of other, you know, going up against multiple people from the Times and the Post. And somehow I managed to get the chairwoman, the jury forewoman, I should say, to talk to me. And I was the only reporter she would. I still don't know why. But it was competitive, but I liked the competition.
Yeah. As a political reporter, you have covered 5 governors.
Mm-hmm.
Bookended by the Cuomos,
yeah.
Mario and Andrew. And how are they different from each other?
I think Mario liked the back and forth with the media more. He might not have liked the media anymore, but he liked the back and forth. He liked the debate, the discussion. He would hold more than one press conference at a time. And I covered him both as a local reporter and as a Capitol reporter his last few months in office. But he definitely liked to spar more. The governor doesn't like to be questioned as much, and the current governor, Cuomo, and I think is less publicly accessible.
Yeah, I remember talking with you and some other reporters like Mark Humbert, who would say that the elder Cuomo was terminably accessible.
Yeah,
accessibility.
You could call the mansion and the governor's mansion, and this trooper would answer, and he'd say, "I'd like to speak to the governor," and say who you are, and he would put you through if he wanted to talk, or he would call you in the morning. This governor is less accessible that way. I think he took what George Pataki started, which was avoiding the LCA, the Capitol reporters, more, and heading out to the localities where you get, you know,
a little better press.
A little better press.
We'll be right back with Ken Lovett.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Ken Lovett is my guest, and today is really his last weekday as a reporter. His last day is Sunday?
Yeah, I have one more column.
Which is coming out Monday.
Right, it's coming out Monday. So, you know, it's interesting. It's going to be my last column, and it falls on the anniversary, the seven-year anniversary of my first column, and I'm kind of proud I haven't missed one. So I haven't missed a Monday in 7 years.
That's amazing.
So I told my wife.
Even on vacation.
The worst was I was getting my tonsils out, and I wrote a column. It was the surgery was on Thursday, and I wrote a column on Wednesday about Mike Bloomberg, and I figured that was good. It's for Monday.
Yeah, it would stand.
I'm on the gurney waiting to go in. It was delayed an hour, and I look down. I'm reading my BlackBerry because I have nothing else to do, or my iPhone, and I see that Bloomberg had endorsed Scott Brown out of Massachusetts, which was gonna. And what my column was how Bloomberg was supporting all these U.S. Senate candidates who were highly rated by the NRA, even though he's so anti-gun. And it hit me, like, I'm sitting there, and I said, this isn't going to hold. Someone's going to put two and two together. Yeah. And so I called the desk from the gurney, and I said, you got to run my story, my column tomorrow as a story. Have, you know, Glenn Blaine, who was working here at the time, said, have him add something about Scott Brown. And he did, and I got home from the hospital on Saturday. Sunday, I woke up on painkillers and basically made a round of calls, got a column, wrote it, and nearly collapsed. That was the one I said, you're an idiot.
Yet you keep doing it.
Yet I keep doing it. Yeah, so it'll be 7 years on the nose, and I haven't missed a Monday, so it's a good way to end.
So lots of things have changed. I mean, politics has changed. The media has changed. You have traveled with this governor to places like Cuba and Israel, but there was a time when reporters would travel with governors on planes on a weekly basis.
I think the access is different, and not just with the governor, but with the legislative leaders that we've seen in recent years, and not access for access sake, but for access to information and access to have a relationship where you exchange information. And I think that has really changed for the worse. I think it's been harder to get information, especially under, you know, in the last couple of years under this administration. That's been harder. You've just seen, and it didn't start with Andrew Cuomo. Certainly, I would argue it started with George Pataki, who started making himself less and less available.
Didn't he cordon off the second floor?
He cordoned off the second floor, which became Fort Pataki, which Cuomo opened. He also, he would travel more without us, and not only without us, but he felt that if he went into localities, local districts, he would get more favorable because, you know.
Well, they don't know. I mean, the local reporters are great reporters, but they don't know all the ins and outs
that's
of the issues.
If I had to ask someone about a Buffalo issue, I don't cover it every day, so I might know what's going on and ask the first question, but I won't necessarily know what to ask follow-up wise because it's not something I cover every day, and it's the same that way, but they realize that they can get away with it. And so really since Pataki, you've seen that more and more where there's been less access to the legislative leaders. It's just been tougher in that regard.
So Ken Lovett has been a reporter for, has it been 30 years?
Yeah, more than 30. It's crazy.
What we're going to do is take a break. When we come back, talk about what's going to be in your future.
Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.
My guest today is Ken Lovett, who has really been here in the LCA as one of the veterans, one of the most well-decorated, award-winning reporters, and he is leaving for a new career. I wanted to quickly ask you about your reporting on the now-defunct Moreland Commission, which was exceptional. You won a lot of awards for it, and it also drove the governor crazy. How did you navigate doing your job when the administration is screaming at you every day?
You know, I've been frozen out by the governor for 7 months his first year. I was frozen out by Sheldon Silver for months, a couple of times, twice. You know, and someone has shut me out. You know, eventually you just do your job. And as I always tell people, you can freeze people out, but they're going to just get stories other places and probably ones you're not going to like anyway. So you just keep your head down and do it. But I will give them credit. When I, you know, I won an LCA award for the Moreland coverage. And that night I ran into Melissa DeRosa, who at the time was communications director, and Matt Wing, who was in the press shop and is now her husband. And Matt, I think it was, and Melissa both congratulated me. Matt said, I wasn't glad you wrote those stories, but you really deserved it.
Wow.
And that is the one thing about journalism that I like, that you can battle and you can fight. But, you know, if you have a respect for each other, and I think the hard part for the Cuomos early on, and this predated the people I just mentioned, was they felt that if you wrote something negative, you had an agenda. And I think for me, with me, I should say, it took about a year for them to realize there's no agenda. You do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. And
you know, call them the way you see them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all you need to do. And if, as long as you can back up what you're reporting, then, you know, whether they talk to you or not, whatever. You know, I don't worry about that as much.
One of the reasons why the Capitol Press Room is here in the plywood hut is because at one time, the New York Daily News had four reporters in Albany, and you outgrew the space. It was you, Bill Hammond, Liz Benjamin, and Glenn Blaine. Now there's just you. And I think it's a perfect illustration of what's happening with the newspaper industry. What do reporters say when they're at the bar having a drink about the state of their livelihood?
You mean a cup of tea?
That's what I mean, a cup of tea.
Look,
yeah.
I will say my career really transcended. Like, my career started in the old way, you know, before cell phones, before social media, even before laptops. And it really went through the new journalism, which is social media, which is so much instantaneous. I think it's just changing. There's always going to be a need for good journalism, especially now. But there's always a need for good journalism. How that's going to shake out, it's not going to be the traditional forms that we know. So newspapers obviously are struggling. Newspapers like the Daily News, they're all struggling, you know, with some exceptions like the Times or the Washington Post. But So it's going to shake out somehow. What that is, I don't think, and where it can be a revenue generator, because that's important.
Somebody's got to figure that out.
And that's the one thing we don't have. We don't know how to monetize, for the most part. Some do, but, you know, there hasn't been a widespread monetizing of the industry online.
No. Right.
And that's going to be an issue, because then you can't afford to pay good reporters, and you'll see more and more you know, fewer and fewer people around for 30 years.
Well, that's the whole thing. The institutional memory is rapidly disappearing. Now, we have some exceptional reporters here.
Absolutely.
Many of them are very good, but they're young. Why does an institutional memory matter?
Well, look, first of all, there's nothing wrong with young. I was young once. I started here when I was 28, and I didn't know anything. But what we're seeing is people aren't staying around that long. So, you know, you have people who start, but then they go either for new opportunities or new professions. I think it's just harder. I think there's so much now instantaneous, just the 24-hour news cycle, it burns a lot of people out. You know, when you're just writing and writing and writing, plus when you're just writing and writing and writing, it gives you less time to look into things.
Like to report.
To report. And for me, that was a frustration, especially in the last year or so. I love reporting. I love looking into things and finding things. And I find that I found that I didn't have as much time to do those kinds of things. So I think that is an issue. But, you know, there are a lot of good reporters. There's a lot of good veteran reporters. You've got Tom Precious. You've got, you know, Karen DeWitt. You've got a lot of good young reporters. You know, I can go through a list. You just hope they're around, because the more they're here, the longer they're here, the more institutional knowledge they will have. But I think, you know, there's a lot of good people here.
Sure. There are some traditions in journalism that are unique to the Legislative Correspondents Association, including the 118-year-old LCA show. Could you share a memory with us?
Yeah, this past one, I had a walk-on, a cameo. And I'm not going to go into when I was wearing diapers or coconut bras, because I think that's where you wanted me to go. But I will say this past one, when right before the dress rehearsal, we found out that Eric Schneiderman story broke in New Yorker magazine.
Yeah.
And we were backstage, and I remember I was getting ready to go on. I was waiting for my cue, and I got a call from a source. And I put it into voicemail, and it called right back, and I picked up. I'm literally behind stage waiting to go on. And I said, can I call you back? And in 2 minutes. And they said, well, just want to let you know, the governor's going to call on Schneiderman to resign. They didn't know if you wanted to tweet that out. So I'm behind stage tweeting out that the, you know, Cuomo is asking, and right as I hit send, I get my cue and I walk out and I do my little bit and then I walk back out. But that was a very weird day because you had the show going on and yet you had this major breaking news. And that's an example of how fast things are now. Yeah. I mean, with Spitzer, his scandal, it took a while. It took days until he finally resigned. With Schneiderman, it was a matter of hours. It was just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, a lot of things have changed. And one of the big things that's going to change for me is that you're not going to be here anymore. I just want to say personally that you've been a mentor and just one of the best reporters that I've ever watched and learned from. And now you're going to be going to a new place, Metropolitan Strategies. What are you going to be doing there?
I'm going to be doing consulting, so I'll be doing some press work for clients. There's a corporate and nonprofit and political clients, both in New York and Florida. I'll be helping develop ad campaigns, both digital and traditional media. I'll also be doing press work in some cases. So, you know, I'll be dealing with issues, which I think is going to be fun. I'm actually very excited about it.
Oh, good.
It. Yeah.
After 3 decades, though, your identity has to be intertwined with being a journalist. I can't imagine that this is easy.
You know, you want to know the truth? Easier than I thought, because the industry has changed so much. And I am excited. Not many people at my age get to change up and do something that excites them. And rather than wait around till I had to find something, I went out on my own terms and was able to find something that at least is exciting me, and I'm excited, you know, I'm looking forward to doing. But yeah, no, my self-image has definitely been as a reporter, and the times have changed. And so I think it's a good time for me to make this change.
The Daily News has replaced you with Dennis Slattery. Does he know what he's getting into here?
I think Dennis is going to be really good. I mean that. I was around him. I see what he's been writing the past week. And I think, you know, it's hard to come in at this time. As I told him, the bad news is you're coming in at the time of the budget and it's crazy. The good news is you're coming in at the time of the budget and the news kind of drags you along.
Right.
So there's stuff, you learn it really quickly. And he's a very smart, good reporter.
And you are going to be coming back to share your political analysis on the Capitol Press Room.
Anytime you want me.
Ken Lovett is the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, at least for a couple more days. Next week, he begins another chapter in his professional life with Metropolitan Public Strategies, where he's going to be serving as the Vice President of Communications and Director of the new Albany office. Ken, thank you for everything.
Thank you. You I'll miss most of all.
Love you. And I want to thank you for joining us for the Capitol Press Room. Our producer has been Tim Williams.
Howdy.
And our engineer, Neil Winchell. I'm Susan Arbetter, and you've been listening to the Capitol Press Room.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.